Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Sales Leadership Awakening podcast. I'm Colleen Stanley with my co-host, Stephen Rosen, and we are tackling that age-old issue of bridging the knowing and doing gap in sales leadership. So, Stephen, always good to see you.
You too as well, Colleen. Always fun to dig into some interesting areas in sales leadership. And today it's my privilege to welcome Brandon Nye. Welcome. Thank you for taking the time to share your wisdom. Can you share with our audience a bit about your background, your company, what you sell, and what type of salespeople you lead?
Sure. Yeah. And thank you for having me on. It's a privilege to be on the show. So I've been in the aesthetic capital equipment business for the past 15 years, started out as a sales rep and then progressed into being a player coach. And then now I'm in leadership through the 15 years, different stages along my career, and currently vice president of sales for InMode and oversee over 100 people. And we sell capital equipment to offices that offer cash-based services. So you can picture a plastic surgery office, a dermatology that's doing aesthetics, or a med spa, right? That is offering a med spa services. And then everything in between. There's been a large amount of practice drift, is what the industry calls it, of physicians that were once formerly doing a different discipline that are now in the cash-based arena, just due to the landscape of the medical economy changing and people trying to really augment their revenues and bring in predictable cash revenue into their practice. It's really changed quite a bit over the past 15 years. It's been an exciting business to be in.
For many years, I've worked with a company that makes Botox, Allergan, and understand that business and enjoy that business. In fact, coming from a pharmaceutical background, being in a cash-based transactional business is a lot of fun. I assume you're not only selling them equipment, but teaching them how to grow their practice, how to grow their business.
Yeah. So much of cash-based medicine is it's a retail business, right? So it's different thought process than what a lot of medical providers who bill for insurance and treat those patients a certain way. A patient that's coming in, given their hard-earned discretionary income, yeah, is a different buyer, right? They're actually a buyer, right?
Yes,
and so they're paying for service and for goods. So there's a shift that has to happen. Some of the hardcore medical practices that are just now putting their toes into this is a big part of the education.
That's a really good to distinguish. I not even really thought about that. So Brandon, going from carrying a bag, a player coach and VP of sales, you've obviously hired a few people. And I guess you've hired good ones. And if you're like all of us, if we do reality testing, we've had some that are not so good. So I'd be curious, because managing a team of 100, what are some of the characteristics, maybe two questions here, that you look for in a candidate, but also in that candidate, are there hard skills you look for and soft skills? So what are some unique ones for your industry, your culture, how you like to roll?
Yeah, definitely made some good hires, made plenty of bad hires, right? I think that's part of the journey of sales leadership. Is if there was a perfect recipe to recruiting and bringing people on, we would have no turnover and every company would be like super elite and the beacon of their industry. But it's one of those things that you learn as you go. I think that as I've done this longer and longer and really gotten what the like archetype is or the avatar of what a really good candidate and employee looks like, you really start to see some of the same trends. So from hard skills, we typically would hire people that have a proven track record of business to business sales, right? So they've gone out and they've cold called other businesses. They've worked a sales process before. They've shown that they will go out and cold call and actually have done thousands of them. And we're not like experimenting with a rep that, hey, this is their first time ever prospecting, right? That would be like a real big gamble. So that's where we first start, is just checking the box there. Have they had a B2B business background and have they been successful doing it?
You know, Brandon, I have to stop you here because this is an area, and Stephen and I have talked about this many a time, where when people are interviewing, they miss that part of the sales process, prospecting. And it is, I think, one of the tougher skills to have because it takes confidence, rejection, persistence. So I am really glad that you're emphasizing that. And I hope all of our listeners picked up on that. It's a big gap I've seen when people are out there hiring and recruiting.
Sorry, I just got off the phone with someone who's recruiting. And of course, we did a podcast on hiring mistakes. And I think, Colleen, you were the one who talked about non-negotiables. His non-negotiable was prospecting. And we worked on some different questions to get people to think, when things are going well, do you continue to prospect? Companies forget that and everyone thinks they know how to do it, but there's a difference between knowing and actually doing.
Yeah. I think there's also different forms of prospectors, right? There's people that have inbound business and understanding their mindset versus somebody that has to go out and generate interest from really someone that doesn't want to speak to them and break down those barriers and walk into those offices is a different skill set. There's just so much more rejection involved in taking someone who's it's cold to, you know, then putting them into the sales process and identifying if they have cold call reluctance will help you to really then just move on from a candidate. I think that's really probably one of the easiest ones from a hard skills perspective. When we look at soft skills, I think that's really where the art of hiring comes in, is figuring out what drives this person. And so as I've done this longer and longer, I've got a couple things that I really feel are good, a great litmus test. They're going to actually work and thrive in a high pressure environment. The first one is, are they competitive, right? What is their background look like? And where have they shown that they're very, very competitive people? Whether it was growing up doing sports, if they come and they bring their stack rankings to an interview process and they got themselves highlighted as number one over and over and over again, and they can tell you where they finished, who was number two, those are good indicators of, hey, this person is driven by this competitive spirit that likes to compete with their peers and likes the pressure of that. That's a unique animal, sales animal, that thrives in our business. It's high pressure, high reward. Every month, month in, month out, there's a number to hit, there's a number to exceed. And those who do it time and time again get rewarded for it. Those who don't are weeded out of the business. So it's figuring out that competitive is one of the first things. The second thing, and it goes along with that, the stack rankings and other evidence that they can show, is, but there's a large part of their identity come from their performance at work, which will show you, like, look behind me, I got awards up. People that come prepared to the interview process to show that, it's an indicator of how they'll perform and the way that they'll be within an organization. Like, I've hired people where they'll say the right things. And then when you start to really press them on where they stack up against their peers, and they're like, I just really would like want a good life, you know, have a good work-life balance. It's like, whoa, we hired the wrong person, because that's just not what this is. Being able to weed those things out is a good indicator. And then I think the third thing, which is just like anything in life, is, are they a problem solver and a person that takes complete ownership of their current situation? One of the things that you'll find is, if someone's complaining a lot about their current situation and it's a blame game of this and that, my manager and the company and the way our products are too expensive, and it's just a laundry list of things that all the reasons they're not successful, that's also a red flag to be like, what do you do about it? How do you overcome these things? And if it's like, that's why I'm looking, you're probably going to inherit someone else's problem. It's not a perfect science, but there is that art of, like, understanding, all right, what are they saying without saying it? What am I going to read in between the lines there? What evidence are they bringing to the conversation to prove these things right or wrong?
Yeah, those are some great points. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, you've been with InMode for 15 years, you've grown up, or you've started as a base sales rep. What was your moment of awakening as a sales leader?
So I've been in the industry for 15 years, InMode for going on six. So I've worked for a couple of different companies in with inside the space. And I think that it'll be relevant to the answer, is that we're going from player, right, individual contributor, to player coach. That's a whole set of skills that you really have to learn. And then there's not, like, a lot of people out there. There's no playbook. There's certainly not an audio book that you can listen to on how to do it. And then going from player coach to just leader, you understand that there's different behavior that you have to really let your identity seek into, and you have muscle memory from the previous roles that you have to let go of, right? So the feeling of like when you're a leader that I need to be out in the field generating revenue right now, that ingrained into you when you're an individual contributor. So not jumping on every single flight, not just getting in the car just because that's what you're used to, but actually using your critical thinking. And that's what you're getting paid to do now, is to make important decisions about where the organization is going, who you're letting into the organization, who you're getting out of the organization. It's like the awakening is probably letting go of the old muscle memory of the past and embracing the new challenges of the future in the current role, and understanding that's going to be uncomfortable because you're not familiar with. And so just with the unfamiliar situations and feelings and emotions, embracing that's good and growth, that's probably one of the biggest awakenings that I've had.
It's a great insight. Many folks think what got them there is going to continue to make them successful. And I think you've demonstrated, or at least discussed, that it's not always the case. You need to develop new behaviors, new muscle memory to move into different roles. We've talked about hiring a certain type of sales rep. Maybe we call them alpha salespeople. I used to use the term killers. Might be some killers. Might not be that popular these days to use that term. But of course, those people are not easy to manage or easy to coach. How do your sales managers advise them to coach these top performing reps who are driven, who want to be on the top of the leaderboard? What advice do you have for other sales managers to be successful managing that type of individual?
Yeah. So this is like the $1 million question. I had 3 coaching conversations this morning about this very thing. What you'll find with these alpha driver mega achievers is that you can't treat them all the same, right? That's number one, is that they're all individuals. So you've got to really assess each situation and understand what their drivers are. Now, we look for the competitive, the identity thing, like those are things. But after they've proven themselves in the industry, time and quarter and year after year and multiple presidents club, they feel a certain way about themselves and they've earned the right to have higher demands and to press their managers a little harder for things and to challenge leadership. Because that's what happens when you get these people that are higher performers. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I say is just understanding it's a good thing, right? You want these people on your team instead of being offended or letting your ego come into play where you're like, I'm feeling disrespected because this person is challenging me. Look at it from the frame of we get to manage these high performers. It's a blessing of life. And that's a quick reframe to not look at the negative side of it, because it can quickly go to they're assaulting my character or whatever it is that you can conjure up in your own mind when people are challenging you. So that's one of the things that I just talked about this morning. And just understanding that, hey, they know they have a certain amount of leverage in terms of if I left, the company would be screwed. There's a little bit of that that goes along, but it's actually in all reality, most people don't want to leave their situation. They have to be really, really forced. So let that kind of stuff roll off. If they fire that bullet, they're not always going to use it. Now you should be aware that if you've broken promises or the company has done things like changed a comp plan out of the blue, then you are putting people at risk, right? So it's just understanding where the heartbeat of the organization is and how to take on these people. And just know they're people just like you. You were probably once a top performer as a leader, right? You probably pressed your leadership to make changes or to take your opinion seriously.
Well, along those lines, we talked about the qualities of salespeople that you hire. Now, assuming some of your managers get promoted and some you may bring in from the outside, what qualities do you look for in sales managers to be able to effectively manage these folks?
So I think a high EQ, right? What's their emotional intelligence like? Are they going to be able to lead a diverse group of people that are going to be challengers or that they're going to be able to communicate effectively? And are they, not to say well-liked, because not all leaders need to be like liked, but are they respected? How do their peers look at them? Those are some of the first things that you would look at. If they meet all of those criteria. Are they ready from a maturity standpoint to take on where you're no longer customer facing, right? You're rep facing. Your problems now change from driving revenue, from interacting and closing deals, to building very strong relationships. It's assessing, are they able to change their mindset along those sort of things? And then giving them grace when they're going through the process of making that change. Because, hey, it's all that muscle memory, all the things that they're used to. And the way you speak to your team can be very different from the way you challenge a customer in a capital equipment environment to make them commit to a purchase, where it's do or die at the end of the quarter. You really have to bring out all of the persuasion capabilities. You might need to leave a lot of the persuasion capabilities on the table when you're dealing with your team on a day-to-day basis. Therefore, they trust you long-term.
When you were demonstrating yourself that when you have high performers, they're going to challenge you. In the EQ world, that's called reality testing. That is the reality. And if you don't accept that reality, you're going to stop resisting it. But the other thing you mentioned there is that you did not get emotionally triggered. And you use a word called reframe, which is a great way to not get emotionally triggered. Oh, this is good. Because I remember years ago, we had to make this big initiative change, and I was flying all over the country to the 7 regions, and I was not getting a good reception, right? So I'm on the plane with this gentleman. I must have looked totally dejected. And I was telling him, well, the reps aren't real happy about the change. And anytime you up level, nobody's happy, right? And he said, I am really glad to hear they were pushing back. And I asked him why. He said, because when people care, they're still passionate. You still have a passionate sales team. If they don't care, they're apathetic. So I think it's interesting that you mentioned they're going to challenge you. Don't get emotionally triggered with it. It's a key skill to be a mature person in life and such. But going back to this, I know you've got a concept you shared with Stephen and I, and I loved it. If you want to expand on it, at your team, you don't have to go it alone. What's that look like at your company, and why did you come up with that?
I think that our business is pretty tribal, right? The elders teach the young, and it's very much a spoken word kind of business where the way you gain information is by picking up the phone and calling somebody that's done it before you. And that's been something that's been ingrained into the culture of our business and our team. So when reps try to play hero ball, I don't need my manager. I'm going to show them that I can do this by myself. We actually don't reward that behavior. We're like, you got the sale, but you didn't pre-call plan. You didn't post-call plan. We call that game film, right? Come out of a meeting, go back through the game film of the meeting and, you know, what went wrong? Where did we tweak? How can we set this next step up a little bit better? It's one of those things where going alone is just a recipe for disaster. You might get lucky, but it's not reproducible. And then someone's development is usually stunted. It's like the kiss of death when a rep gets like a really lucky deal early in their career. You'd have to work that hard to get it. And then the expectations aren't there. But I think that's a big part of it is the recall planning.
Well, I have to give you credit though. For some reason, you have set that expectation of the elders, because I had so many great mentors when I was starting in sales. I can tell you story after story of why that helped me be successful. What drove that for you to install that elder mentality in your sales culture?
I think that over time, people move up and they lived in the environment of pay it forward, right? So they once called one of the original people within the industry and they got advice from them that really helped their career. Now, many of these people are in leadership 6, 10, 12 years later. And so they've just lived it for so many years that it would be audacious to not take a call from a younger person. Furthermore, the people that maybe if you are re-leading an organization or you're adopting a team that maybe has some elder statespeople that don't share those ideas, they get weeded out, right? As time goes on, because we really do sell in a team environment. And that's a way to drive incredible performance to make it team oriented.
To me, it sounds like that's part of the culture.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So does your incentive system play any role in that, or the things that you do to encourage that type of behavior? Or is that basically a cultural decision? And this is how we do business here.
Yeah, there's a way that we have our comp structure set up is in a hierarchy, but it's more cultural on the behavior is. It's not money driven. It's not like the elder gets paid more to take a call from somebody from outside their region. It's more like we win as a company, and that keeps us in a dominant market's position. Therefore, it's easier for me to sell in my market if you're selling in your market, because we keep our market share and we keep our position as the leader in the industry and we share information in between teams. One of the things that we do is we have WhatsApp channels, and our WhatsApp channels will have 50, 100, 75 people in all different kind of levels of the organization. And it might be like we've got an eye care division, right? And one of the eye care chain is insanely active because it's one of our newer divisions. The whole company is sharing in there all day long. And if anybody's like, hey, I need help with this particular question, there's six reps that are like, I'm in the car, call me. And so, you know, they'll pick up, and then that's very much how stuff is shared. A newer thing that has come along in technology-wise, which I think has been really, really helpful, is voice notes. We'll have reps leave voice notes, 4 or 5 minute voice notes, where it's like, this is what I ran into. This is what I did. This is how I handled it. This is what the competition's saying. This is what we're learning about the industry. It goes into the WhatsApp chat. People star it so they can go back to competitive information about X, Y, and Z company, and it's there. It's living. I think that's another part of having a thriving culture is that it's just always going. It goes back to when you're hiring, you do want to warn people like, hey, your phone will go off all day, all night. That's part of this. If you have boundaries with your phone, that's all good. But during working times, it's going to go off and you just need to be prepared for it.
Interesting. Well, I think those are some really great insights on what makes you and your team successful in a highly competitive market, which I know is out there. Colleen, is there anything? No, I'm sure there's many things, but what's the one thing that resonates most with you in terms of what Brandon shared with our audience? Brandon, thank you. I think there's some really good insights. I have one that maybe I like more than the others. I think throughout, there's some really cool things. We all want high performance organizations. You seem to have figured out the formula or the code to make sure that happens.
So I would say, oh, and there are so many good things. I hope people listen to this and re-listen to it, Brandon. But for me, and this has just been something I've been thinking about a lot lately, so this is probably why it's resonating, is I'm going to use my words, not yours, but you've created a community. And I think in this day and age of burnout, stress out, the loneliness epidemic, all of these things we're hearing about, I'm not hearing that at your company. And it's because you've set this expectation of sharing, collaboration, being an elder, paying it forward. And so I love it because for years, I've always said it takes a sales village to win and retain business. And you are doing that. I don't see that happening in every culture. So the fact that he's built a great community, that's my big takeaway.
Terrific.
I think one thing worth noting is it's got to be fun too, right? Winning's always fun. Making money's fun. But also just the day in, day out communication should be a lot of fun. One thing that just come to mind. So I don't know if you're familiar with stickers, that you can create stickers in your pictures. When people get deals, we have where they will take a picture either of themselves or the machine or whatever, and that we'll create stickers. And people will Photoshop these stickers to have these hilarious like things. And so it's exciting. You're going to get the dopamine rush if you get the deal, right? Because there's going to be a sticker of you in this chat with 100 people and everyone's congratulating. It's simple. It costs no money. And it really drives behavior. It really, really does. So people look forward to the deal picture. Like that's their reward for getting the deal. It's like, all right, the commission's going to come, but I cannot wait until I post my selfie to the chat to get the recognition.
Maybe I'll choose that one because I do like sending pictures and I think imagery evokes emotional response. But for me, Brandon, I understand the nature of your organization because I've worked with companies that are in that business. Some sell equipment, some sell reusables. But to me, it really does start with hiring the right person. And the effort and the thought process as to what the right person is, I think is critical. I know from Colleen, one of my great takeaways is the non-negotiables. You want drivers. You want people who are competitive and are going to go out there and make a difference. The funny thing is, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. Those are skills that your top 20% of people out there exhibit. But it sounds like you've really honed in on that being a non-negotiable. So kudos to you. Wish you ongoing success in your business. Thank you for joining us and sharing so openly today. And thank you for joining us, our wonderful audience of sales leaders. We hope you gained some really cool insights. I know I did, about bridging the gap between knowing what to do and actually doing it. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Brandon.